WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. There is an awful lot for the Democratic Party to be working on these days. The war in Ukraine is persisting, threatening our global order, increasing prices, and straining already strained supply chains. The ability for women to get abortions is likely to become a lot more difficult, if not outright illegal, in many states in our country. And even though Democrats have injected a lot of cash into the economy, inflation has really dampened the positive effects, making everything a lot more expensive. It's all to say that it appears Democrats have a pretty big uphill climb ahead of them into the midterm elections in November. Here to talk about all these topics swirling in Washington and what Democrats are planning to do to win in November is Congresswoman of the 8th District in Michigan, Alyssa Slotkin. Congresswoman Slotkin, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
So people are not really getting very far with their dollars, as I said, because of inflation. Talk about what you're working on to lower gas and food prices and just to make things more affordable for everybody.
Yeah, well, obviously the gas price is the one that is hitting people particularly hard, particularly in a like my district where a lot of people drive 40 miles one way to work. But it also underpins why so many other prices are going up, because that watermelon or whatever you want to buy at the grocery store had to be transported there and it costs more money. So it really is, kind of at the heart of lots and lots of things, of price hikes. I think on the oil issue in particular, if there were a silver bullet, people would have fired it. So there's got to be a combination of things that go to work. One is I'm a big believer in reopening the natural, the strategic reserve that we have in the United States here. So we literally maintain a reserve. We can open it up. We have done it a little bit. We can do it again. It's, again, not perfect, but it's something that helps. Certainly, the oil companies are making record profits, both American oil companies, but frankly, our Middle Eastern allies have never been making more money off of the price of gas. So just, I think, bringing in those companies, the American ones, where we have more of a sway, and having a frank conversation about what it means that they're making record profits while people are suffering, I think is an important thing for the White House to be doing. We're literally looking at that from a legislative perspective in the next week or so, but then putting more pressure on the Saudis and others to do the same thing. That takes a firm hand in diplomacy. It takes a lot of transactional conversations, frankly, to have with those countries. I've seen those in real time, so we need to have more of those. And then, frankly, particularly for the market, I mean, being open to doing what we need to do to up production in the United States and up refining in the United States. And that doesn't mean any one of those things is perfect, but we should be caught trying and trying all of these things regularly, constantly, until we get some normalcy on that price.
So what are the leverage points, I guess, for Congress in particular, when you're dealing with companies, and it's not just oil companies that are reporting incredible profits. Lots of different companies are doing quite well, even as Americans are, stretching their dollars further than they have in recent memory. What can Congress do about that? I mean, we live in a capitalist society where you're allowed to make money off of people, even when they're suffering.
Yeah. And look, I think we want our companies to do well, our American companies to succeed. And we know a lot of these companies lost a lot of money during COVID and they're trying to make that up. And we understand that there's nothing wrong with making good money. There is something wrong if there's price gouging. A bunch of states across the country, including Michigan, have price gouging laws. We don't want to have one at the federal level, and that's being debated. I don't know where, frankly, it's going to end up, but I think that's the conversation, is there's a different standard between making good profits, making good money, succeeding as a business, which is what we want for every business, and price gouging, particularly because you're in a moment of opportunity. So Michigan has those laws. It's the same concept at the federal level that's being considered.
So I want to switch subjects here and talk about the leaked draft opinion from the Supreme Court that would not only overturn Roe v. Wade, but really assault the very idea of unenumerated rights, the idea that privacy protections are somehow enshrined in our Constitution. First, just get your reaction to that draft opinion, and then talk about what the landscape will look like afterward. What will the landscape in Congress look like? What will the landscape look like in states like Michigan, where we do have this very old law in the books that pretty much outright bans abortion? A court recently said that it believes that will be overturned. So there's a block on that law, but it's a fight that we're going to have here, I think. And I guess I'm not certain how it turns out.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's certain because it's in the courts. But I think the straight, clear answer is that watching, seeing that leaked opinion, I think for me and for a lot of people was just very difficult to see. And knowing that Michigan has this 1931 law on the books where you literally can't get an abortion for anything other than what seems like imminent death of the mother. So rape or incest, mm-hmm. or even just, you're about to go through chemotherapy and you get pregnant. There are a bunch of scenarios, even extreme scenarios, that wouldn't be covered and allowed in Michigan. And then it makes it a felony, and providers can literally go to jail for 4 years for performing an abortion. So it will absolutely scare everybody out of that business. So I think, we do have some sort of temporary postponement right now, but I don't think anyone thinks that this is decided and it's final, and we have to assume that that law will still be on the books. Certainly our legislature has continued to keep it on the books and even tried to make it stronger, many members of the Michigan Senate. I think for me, my views on this are encapsulated in a conversation I had from the Detroit airport to Washington last week. I sat next to two women who struck up a conversation with me. They knew I was a congresswoman. Both of them said very clearly that they were pro-life, both of them very Catholic and very devout. They understood what a sensitive topic this was, no matter what you feel about it, and I certainly feel that. But it was interesting. One woman said, look, I'm pro-life, I'm Catholic, I could never personally have an abortion. Then one next to me, closest to me, said, I am pro-life, I'm Catholic, I could never have an abortion, except that I did because I was in the middle of a miscarriage and my body wasn't responding well, and I had what could technically be called a miscarriage, an abortion. And both of them said that no matter what they felt, they would never impose their views on anybody else. And I think, to me, it's an issue of personal freedom. If you believe in personal freedom and keeping the government out of your choices, you have to be clear about that, whether you have the same opinion as someone else or not. And I think a lot of people who profess the importance of personal freedom are the exact ones who have turned around and are trying to curb the personal freedom of other people. So people have the right to make choices, and I wish we had a bit more of an understanding about that. But what's frustrating me is that we don't have a good plan at the federal level, and we have to acknowledge that. In Michigan, there's a plan. It's a legal options, two court cases, and a petition drive. And from what I see, Michigan is one of the only places that has a plan. At the federal level, I've been, frankly, disappointed to see that there isn't a plan in place, since we know this is coming. But there are certainly lots of folks now working on what we can legally do. And, obviously we passed a law here in the House. It didn't succeed in the Senate to codify just what we had mm-hmm. for the past 50 years, what our grandmothers had. But it's coming. And I know that people are scrambling to try to figure out not just what we do from a sort of raise your voice perspective, but from a concrete planning perspective, a legal perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a nice way to start talking about the Democratic strategy for the fall. Let's say this opinion comes out at the end of the Supreme Court term, which is somewhere around the end of June. That's about 5 months before voters are going to go to the polls. What's the Democratic message this fall to hold the House and the Senate, which clearly are some of the goals? And what role does abortion, which has not been much of a wedge issue for Democrats for so long because the law has been pretty settled, how does it fit into that narrative? What do Democrats say to voters going into these midterms?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Certainly for me, as someone who's a Democrat who represents a Republican district, there is no, like, let's all have the same message across the country and think that that's going to work. Michigan is a very independently minded place. People often still, thank God, pick the person over the party. I think that's a good thing. And so for me, local issues, jobs, and the economy are always going to be front and center. In terms of how the Roe decision impacts the election, it is a long way away. And I think we always get in this, this like loop of trying to predict what's going to happen. And if there's one thing I know for sure in my very short time in elected politics is that their attention span is short. And so it's going to be really important for people to make choices and mobilize and get engaged and make decisions about what they want to do to contribute. And I think first and foremost, we can say with certainty that while we may have thought that rights that we had for 50 years are just going to stay rights for the next 50 years, I don't think we can say that. And that's one thing about choice, but also about voting rights and a bunch of other things related to the foundation of democracy.
Yeah.
It doesn't just stay stagnant. You have to defend them. And there's lots of people who have lots of plans to take them away.
Yeah.
So for me, I can't predict what's going to be like the signature issue because it's far away. And every year people like to believe polling. And every year we say, oh, the polling was so wrong. So somehow still believe it. So, I can't speak to what that one thing will be. I just know that if you sit still and you just think that everything's going to be fine in this democracy that we fought for and we love, we're not going to have the same rights that our parents and grandparents had.
Yeah. I'm talking with Representative Alyssa Slotkin. She's a Democratic congresswoman who represents Michigan's 8th congressional district. Before we have to let you go, Congresswoman, I do want to talk about Ukraine and the work that you've been doing to make sure that people fleeing Ukraine have a place to go here in the United States. This is an issue that you have really sort of taken the lead on, and it clearly means a lot to you personally. Talk about where we are with all of that.
Well, obviously, the war in Ukraine continues, and it's just been amazing, I guess, for me as a longtime national security person to watch how successful the Ukrainians have been. The combination of their will to fight with weapons and materiel from the United States and money from lots of places and just frankly creativity against an old Soviet style army just has been more successful than I think anyone could have predicted. I'm genuinely enjoying watching the Russian army fail at the basic things like logistics. I do think, though, that, Ukraine has a disproportionate effect on, again, things like world prices, the price of food. They're a huge producer of wheat. They can't get that wheat out of their ports. Farmers are bravely planting there. I have seen pictures. People have texted me. Farmers in Ukraine have gotten a good chunk of their wheat in the ground, the seeds in the ground, by wearing like body armor and helmets as they ride on their tractors because they're in active war zones. So there's some pretty amazing stuff going on, but we need now to understand kind of how this ends. And it ends when the Russians feel pain enough for them to say, our goals have been so shrunk that we're ready to take any off-ramp to get out of here, pretend to declare victory, and get out. And I think that's what the conversation has shifted to. In the meantime, it's the most bipartisan issue I've worked on in Congress in my 3.5 years here, which is a good thing. National security should be bipartisan. And I know that we're all watching to understand, what more we can do to make Russia feel the pain from their decision to invade a democratic neighbor.
Yeah. Okay. Alyssa Slotkin, Democratic congresswoman who represents Michigan's 8th congressional district. Always great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we are going to talk about what it would mean if Elon Musk, by some measures the richest man in the world, bought Twitter. We're going to talk about how that connects to the nature of free speech and expression on the internet. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.